watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wildflowers grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Thanks, Alex. Morning, everyone. In the art of preaching, which is sometimes called homiletics, we are advised to begin a sermon with a really interesting sentence that catches the attention. So here goes. In 1996, I had two favorite t-shirts. The first was one that I got having climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and it was a sort of a Nike ripoff. It had a swish on it, an image of Kilimanjaro, and then rather smugly, it said, "Just done it." So that was good, I like that. But my other favorite t-shirt that year was a No Fear t-shirt. And in my school at that time, anyone who was anyone had a No Fear t-shirt. And these particular No Fear t-shirts were plain on the front, except for a little No Fear logo, but then they all had, in huge letters, emblazoned across the back, some kind of slogan or exhortation. And they were the kind of slogans or exhortations you could imagine a slightly overly aggressive dad shouting at his 9-year-old son or daughter playing football, you know, that kind of a thing. But we loved them. And everyone who was anyone had one. And I've got a few to show you here. So the first one, which we should have up on the screen, second place is first loser. That was on the back of one of the t-shirts. Okay, I mean, I suppose technically that's true. I don't know how helpful it is, but yeah, technically true. The second one, you let up, you lose. I don't know how you feel about that, but yeah, I suppose you could consider that to be encouraging in some way, shape, or form. The third one, one of my favorites, this one. The more you sweat in practice, the less you bleed in battle. That's good, isn't it? You can imagine Alex Ferguson bellowing that at his team in pre-season training as they're vomiting on the side of the pitch or something. It's, yeah, that's one. I like that. The next one, not so sure about this one. Everything you're running away from is in your head. Now, A, I'm not sure that that's true for most people, and B, even if it is, I'm not sure that's helpful to say. So, not convinced by that one. And then the last one is, he who dies with the most toys still dies. And this is obviously the best one of all of them. Not just because it's the one that I had, but because actually, I could imagine Jesus saying this. I could absolutely imagine Jesus saying, he who dies with the most toys still dies. And it actually fits in beautifully with the passage that Alex just read for us and the parable that Jesus told. So as we look at it, I want you to hold he who dies with the most toys still dies in your head as we look at this passage. So a bit of a recap. Jesus is in the middle of a huge crowd. He's on his way up to Jerusalem. He's not long ago just had a big old barney with the Pharisees. He's then taken his disciples on a roller coaster ride through all sorts of things which he's kind of exhorting them to as they approach some of the most difficult times of their lives. And then someone in the crowd shouts out to Jesus, "Oi, teacher, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." Now, I don't know why I think this, and you wouldn't have guessed it from the impression I just attempted, but I always imagine this chap as Rodney from Only Fools and Horses for some reason. But Jesus says, "Man, who made me arbiter between you? Basically, it's none of my business. Sort it out amongst yourselves." But he takes the opportunity to go on and to teach a little bit about money, about possessions, about greed, and about generosity. And Jesus speaks a lot about these things. In fact, the only thing he talks more about is love. He talks about money, possessions, greed, generosity, just all the time. So clearly, Jesus thinks that it's important to talk about these things. In 21st century southern England, we find it rather harder. And yet, if we're going to follow Jesus, if we're going to seek to be disciples, we do need to talk about these things. And as Martin said, we try to get a balance here at St. Luke's. No pressure, no guilt, no condemnation, but an acknowledgement that actually what we do with our money and our possessions is just as important a part of discipleship as how we pray or read the Bible or do good works or witness to other people. This is just as important. Jesus clearly believes it's important. And so here he takes the opportunity. And he begins by saying, and I guess this could have been directed at the person who called out, or indeed at his brother, and I think actually at all of us. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Now that could be a no fear t-shirt, I think. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. And at the time that Jesus was speaking, and perhaps even more today, that is a deeply countercultural phrase. Because we are led to believe that life absolutely does consist in the abundance of possessions, that the more we have, the happier we will be. And despite all the empirical evidence to the contrary, we do believe, most of us, most of the time, that the more you have, the happier you will be. But Jesus says that is not the case. And to show what he means, he tells a story. And the story is one that we know today as the parable of the rich fool. Now, before you switch off thinking, well, I'm not rich or a fool, or at least not one of those, then don't switch off, because this is for all of us. We all have the capacity within us to be a rich fool. So here's the story. Jesus says, there was a man, he was a wealthy landowner. And one year he had an incredible harvest. Just everything grew abundantly. It was absolutely glorious. And after the harvest, after he'd got every little bit he could out of the land, he realized that his barns simply weren't big enough to hold all that grain. So he tore them down and built big ones, huge ones, massive ones, to store all of his wealth. Now you might be thinking, well, what's wrong there? It's perfectly reasonable to put aside for a rainy day. Why not save? Well, to understand, we have to jump back into the Old Testament. As is very often the case, when we read things in the Gospels, in the New Testament, in order to really understand what's going on, we have to have some understanding of what's going on in the Old Testament. It's why here at St. Luke's, even though we acknowledge that bits of the Old Testament are tough or difficult to engage with, actually it's really important to do that. And so I want to take you back into the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. Now put your hands up if Leviticus or Deuteronomy is your favourite book in the Bible. Now, I'm blind, but I'll eat my hat if anyone put their hand up there. Because let's be honest, I don't know if it's okay for a vicar to say this in church about the Bible, but they're a bit boring, aren't they? There's just a whole bunch of rules, regulations, laws, and commandments. They're not easy to engage with. And yet, there are some absolute gems in there. And the reason that God gave all these rules and regulations, laws and commandments to his people was not because he's a spoilsport God who likes to stop people having fun, but because he knows what is best for people. He knows and he desires healthy, flourishing individuals and healthy, flourishing communities. And so all these commandments that we read in those books of the Bible, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy in particular, also Exodus to some extent, they are about how to create a healthy, flourishing community lived out by healthy, flourishing individuals. And so there are some really fascinating, interesting laws. And when you look at the laws and commandments from that perspective, even the ones that feel don't make enormous amounts of sense to us today, we can begin to understand what the desire, the attitude behind them. And there's a couple of those that I want to pull out here. And we find them in Leviticus 19, verse 9, and Deuteronomy 24, verse 19. And they are aimed at landowners, so the people who have plenty of land. And they are told, at the harvest, when you're harvesting your crops, make sure that you don't harvest right to the edges of your fields, and also leave the corners unharvested. And the landowners are not told exactly how much of their fields they need to leave free, but it's at least 10%, but could be much more than that. Now, the corners and the sides of the field are quite tricky to harvest, so it's no great loss to leave those unharvested. But that's what they're called to do. And the reason for it is so that the poorest people in the community, those people who were often orphans, widows, or foreigners, who didn't have ways of making money or growing crops for themselves, were able to themselves go and harvest the corners of the field so that they had enough to last them through the winter. And the commandment goes on also, when you're harvesting your crops, don't go back over the field a second time and don't pick up the gleanings. So to explain that, we need to know that they didn't have combine harvesters, obviously, back then. And so landowners got their employees to walk up and down the fields, and they had a big sack on their back and a big scythe in their hand. It was all very pole dark. And they would go along and they would grab the top of the wheat, they would chop it with the scythe, and then put it in the sack. Just like that, but without the sound effects. And that will have gone down really well for people listening on the podcast. So they go up and down the field like that. But what it meant was that bits of the grain didn't get harvested because they'd miss it. And then other bits, as they were putting it over in the sack, would fall away. And those were called the gleanings. And so the commandment is, don't go back over a second time and don't pick up all those gleanings. Instead, leave that for those people who are the poorest in your community so that they can collect those for themselves. And the same thing applies in your vineyards and in your olive groves. So, those are the commandments for the people. And they're brilliant. You know, they are all about making sure that those people who don't have much do have enough, by virtue of those who have plenty not claiming too much for themselves. So, jumping back into the New Testament, we have this rich fool, this landowner, and he has gathered up all of his crops. He's not left anything. He's taken the whole shebang, corners, gleanings, and all. And instead of thinking that he's got more than enough and could be generous towards those who don't have very much, he instead is only thinking about himself. He wants to eat, drink, and be merry. There is nothing wrong with eating, drinking, and being merry. Jesus was quite partial to those things himself. But the man's heart was in the wrong place. He was so obsessed with accruing stuff that he'd lost the plot on being generous to others. And so he gets all this stuff, and then God says to him, "Oh, you Wally. You've got all this stuff, but as it happens, you're going to die tonight. So was it really worth it?" And reading between the lines, we can see it saying, "He who dies with the most toys still dies." And then Jesus says, "This is what it will be like for anyone who stores up possessions for themselves and is not rich towards God." Now, we need to be really careful here. It is not wrong in and of itself to store up possessions. It's not wrong to harvest well. It's not wrong to be wealthy. All those things are okay, as long as you are also being rich towards God. And how are we rich towards God? We're rich towards God by being generous to others. And the thing is, these things creep up on us. We don't start out thinking, "I'm going to be greedy," or at least most of us don't. Most of us think, "I just need enough. I just need a bit more. I just need that much money, or I just need that promotion, or I just need to live in that kind of a house. And then I'll be able to be really generous. But I can't quite do it just yet." What I want to do for a few minutes is do some compare and contrast between greed and generosity. And for the purposes of that, greed is the unnecessary storing up of money and possessions. Okay, the unnecessary storing up of money and possessions. And the thing is that greed sneaks up on us. When I was 8, all my friends had computers and we didn't. And I remember thinking, "If only I have a computer, then I'd be happy." And then one day we got a computer and it was amazing. I think it was an IBM. And I'm really glad at this point that the children and the young people are out of the room, because this would really date me, but it was black and white. And after about a week, I looked around and I realized that most of my friends didn't have black and white computers, but they had computers with CGA graphics. Now, I'm not very technical, and I think CGA and these things relate to the number of pixels, but for me, it was all about how many colors you could have. And CGA graphics had 4 colors on it. I only had black and white, and I knew that if I just had CGA graphics, then I'd be happy. And eventually, we got a computer with CGA graphics, and I remember playing a Bruce Lee game with CGA graphics. Oh, it was incredible. But then EGA graphics came out, and that had 16 colours on it. And I knew that if I just had EGA graphics, then I'd be happy. And so we bought an EGA graphics card for our computer and put it in, and it was incredible. I had 4 times the number of colours on my screen than I'd had the week before. And it was amazing until, you've guessed it, VGA graphics came out. And I knew that if I could just have VGA graphics, not 4 or 16 colours, not even 34 or 32 or 64, but 256 colours, well, then I'd be happy. Some years later, we got a computer with VGA graphics, and yeah, you've guessed it, Super VGA graphics came out not long after that. You see the point. It's so easy to think, if I just had that much, then I'd be happy. And if I just had that much, then I'd be generous. But all the evidence points to the fact that that's not how it works. Now, of course, we have to have a base level of provision. Of course we do. But beyond that point, actually, greed sneaks in. Conversely, generosity is hard to start with. It's hard to be generous. Because by its very nature, it makes us gulp. Otherwise, we're probably not actually being generous. Sometimes Tors and I feel nudged to give money or something away to an individual or to an organization. And we'll have a chat about how much we should give. And nearly always, Tors will say, well, how about £200? And I'll be like, what? I was going to suggest a fiver. Tors is very often right. And the way that I know that I'm being generous is when I'm like, oh, crumbs. Generosity is hard to start with. But the thing about generosity is, the more generous we are, the easier it is to be generous. The more generous we are, the easier we find it to be generous. I want to carry on with this compare and contrast between greed and generosity, but thinking now about, well, why? Why bother? Why should we be rich towards God by being generous to others? Remember, all of God's commandments are about healthy, flourishing individuals in a healthy, flourishing community. So here's a few compare and contrasts. Firstly, greed leads to worry, fear, and corruption. Jesus goes on to talk about, you don't need to worry about stuff. He's already been banging on about sparrows earlier on in the chapter, and he's now banging on about ravens in this bit. He's got a bit of an obsession with birds at this point. Not in a sort of a 1990s East End kind of obsession with birds, but actual birds. Just want to be clear on that. And he's saying, you don't need to worry. But actually, greed gets into us. And we start to worry about what we've got. And then however much we do have, we still want more. It makes us worry. It makes us afraid. It makes us think about, oh, well, what happens if this happens or that happens? Then we could lose what we have. Also, it leads to corruption. Greed at its most extreme form leads to corruption. So we can see that, can't we? Amongst the wealthiest people in our society and in our world, we can see it in all sorts of parts of the world. The desire for more leads to corruption. And of course, corruption can never be part of a healthy, flourishing community. So greed leads to worry, fear, and corruption. Generosity leads to peace. Contrary to what we might expect, it's actually as we give away what we have that we find peace. It's as we are generous with what we have that we begin to stop worrying about needing more, and instead we enjoy giving away. We enjoy giving, being part of growing a healthy, flourishing community. So greed leads to worry, fear, and corruption. Generosity leads to peace. Greed leads to a desire to be served. Generosity to a desire to serve. The more we have, the more we end up expecting others to do for us. It just seems to be the case. But the more generous we are, it promotes in us a spirit of self-sacrifice, of service, of giving. And that's the path that Jesus took, and it's the path that he calls us to take too. Greed leads to isolation, and generosity to community. Again, you'll notice that if we look throughout history, the more money and stuff we accrue, the more isolated we become. We hide away behind our houses, behind our big walls. And actually, it leads to isolation. And even if you are a rabid introvert, community is a good thing because we are built to be in community. Isolation brings all sorts of its own problems. In fact, I think that in our society today, we are increasingly isolated, and it's one of the things which is leading to this epidemic of mental health issues that we're experiencing. There are other things too, but I think our increasingly insular nature is a huge part of that. Generosity leads to community, because as we are generous of spirit, generous of heart, generous with what we have, we grow in relationships with those around us. Fourthly, then, greed is fruitless. Generosity is fruitful. Now, you might have noticed that so far, all the things I've spoken about in terms of generosity and greed apply to us ourselves rather than to others. And we might think that the most important thing about being generous is giving is what the other person or organization receives. Now, that is really important. But I wanted to start with those other things because actually it's really important to recognize that God, when he calls us to be generous rather than greedy, is not just doing it for the sake of other people, but for our own benefit too. However, that said, also, we need to recognize that greed is fruitless and generosity is fruitful. So, as we've seen from the parable of the rich fool, in the end, greed is fruitless because he who dies with the most toys still dies. You can't take it with you. But also, in fact, life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Accruing all that stuff doesn't make us happy, joyful, loving, peaceful, all the things that are really what we're looking for in life. So it's fruitless for ourselves, but it's also fruitless because we're not benefiting our community. We're not blessing others. Conversely, generosity is fruitful both for ourselves, it leads to fulfillment, but also because we're able to bless others. We're able to equip others, to enfranchise others, to help others to grow in their own journey. So, greed is very easy, and it sneaks in and takes us by surprise. It leads to worry, fear, corruption, a desire to be served, and to isolation, and is ultimately fruitless. Generosity is hard at the start, but gets easier, and leads to peace, a desire to serve, to the fostering of community, and to fruitfulness. It's a no-brainer, isn't it? And yet still somehow, it's really tough to choose to live a generous life. Excuse me. So two practical tips as I finish. One, be organized. And two, be spontaneous. Sorry, excuse me. So be organized and be spontaneous. Now, what I've been talking about today is a general thing about generous living. Now, part of that, I think an important part, is giving to your local church. And if you're a member here at St. Luke's, then I think giving to St. Luke's is important. But also, I want to encourage generosity in all areas of life. So we're not, in this discipleship element, we're not just thinking about St. Luke's here. But be organized. If you're going to give to organisations, do it with the parish giving scheme. Do it with standing orders. Make sure it comes out of your bank account without you necessarily having to think about it. Don't leave it to just whatever you've got left at the end of the month, and then you can give a bit of that away. Be organised, get it done, because actually that builds a good habit. It's why we encourage the parish giving scheme here. It's why lots of other charities encourage people to give by standing order and so on. It fosters good habits. So be organised. But then secondly, also be spontaneous. Be on the lookout for people or organisations that you might bless just because you feel God nudging you to do so. I don't know how God speaks to you. It'll be different for each of us. But sometimes I just get the sense of God saying, that person could do with a bit of help right now. And it's, for me, it's just a gut feeling. And I've learned to kind of trust that. And I'm learning to then be generous as a result of that. So be spontaneous. If you feel that, even if you can't explain it, God's prompting you to be generous to someone or to a particular organisation or charity, then go with that. Run with it. So be organised and be spontaneous. I hope that all of that has made sense. I hope it hasn't come across as guilt-inducing or pressuring. Because actually the point of all of this is not that we should live generous lives out of a sense of oppression or guilt, but rather that as we grow in our understanding of who God is and who he's calling us to be, that we would seek to be generous, that we would seek to live fruitful lives in that kind of a way. So, that's the theology. What does it mean for you in practice?